It's time for Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Haidt.
Rattler awaits a shotgun snap, gets it, blitz coming, pressure coming. Barrett Carter getting out and sacking Rattler.
They do have a timeout, decide not to use it. Curry, way downtown, bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry! With 0.6 seconds remaining.
He could have easily gotten 5 or 6 yards if he would have just pulled that thing down and dove forward.
But why do you even ponder passing? I mean, you can take a knee and try a 56-yard field goal. This is not Detroit, man. This is the Super Bowl.
Oh, what a play by Mike Williams. A touchdown of 19 yards. I mean, he put Jamarcus King on his back and gave that chicken a ride.
Free throw shooter.
Clark in a straight check. Oh, he didn't need to do that. He threw it away. King, Pagese.
To the sideline, caught first down. Woo! What a hit, Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
Well, there's Chase Hunter. 2 seconds. One launches a three. Good if it goes. It does. Chase Hunter, the three at the buzzer sends Clemson into the locker room up 10.
A double pumper. That was a double pump shot.
That was another one from the band down by the river.
Now, let's go live to Facts and Childress and John Haidt.
We welcome you in, everybody, to the Wednesday edition of Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Haidt right here on 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in with us today. Jam-packed program with much to discuss throughout the course of our 3 hours. We've got Chapel Fowler from the state joining us at 9:20. Going to be talking Clemson football and his perspective on the latest in the world of Clemson football. We'll also be joined by Landon Walker at 10 o'clock. Excited to hear from the former Clemson offensive lineman as he's going to run us through what in the world's going on up front right now for the Tigers, because albeit the quarterback play has not been good enough, the offensive line play has also been nowhere near good enough right now for these Tigers. A ton of other stuff to get to in the world of college football because we haven't really had the chance to talk about it any other games from this past weekend. So definitely want to take the trip down memory lane to Saturday, talk about some of the best results in college football, and then we'll flip the show about halfway through to preview mode and start talking about what's on the calendar this upcoming weekend. 654 Roar, if you would like to check in with us. John, what's going on? How was your Tuesday? Excited for the show today?
Excited for the show today, for sure. It wasn't as newsworthy yesterday, unless you lived in like the state of Oklahoma, because boy, was there a lot that happened out there yesterday. Yeah. We see Mike Gundy be removed from his post as one of the longest tenured head coaches in the sport. And John Mateer had surgery, Oklahoma quarterback, out indefinitely for several weeks. A lot of news in the state of Oklahoma yesterday.
A lot of news in the state of Oklahoma. And with Mateer specifically, it's going to be interesting to see how that impacts the overall outlook on just that league in general, right? Oklahoma looking as dangerous as they've ever looked during the Brent Venables era. It feels like they finally have an identity on that offensive side of the football. They finally have a quarterback and an offensive coordinator that's a match made in heaven with Arbuckle and Mateer. And then it gets ripped away from you overnight. Next 3 weeks, the schedule's very, very daunting for the Sooners as well. And they're going to have to find a way to battle through with Michael Hawkins Jr., who we saw last year. And just to put it bluntly, does not have a lot of arm talent. He's got some talent with his legs, did not see a ton with his arm last year that would instill confidence in Oklahoma fans going forward, but definitely still excited to see them play this upcoming weekend and seeing how they forge forward into the fire without their quarterback, John Mateer. So for OU, I think the understanding is that he's going to miss each of the next three games, right? They have bye week, Kent State, Texas, South Carolina, and the tentative timeline is he's going to be back for that home game against Ole Miss. But still, to miss Texas and at South Carolina, those are definitely two potential losses for the Sooners, and that injury could end up impacting them in a big-time way.
It certainly could. Yeah, I'd be curious to see how does Hawkins fit with this Ben Arbuckle offense. Very different than what Seth Luttrell wanted to run last year out there in Norman, Oklahoma, so be curious to see if he's more of a fit for this, but yeah, this is not good. I mean, you know, I think they need to be very happy that they got Auburn out of the way and got that taken care of before this occurred, but Yeah, it's a tough stretch coming up for these guys, and I'm not sure how they're going to navigate it. I'm not willing to, you know, kind of write the verdict on Oklahoma yet one way or the other, because I do think, you know, I want to see what Hawkins looks like in a different scheme with wide receivers that will actually participate, unlike last year, yep, and an offensive line that seems to know what they're doing. But, boy, is that tough. And especially when Red River's a couple weeks away, I mean, I think you'd agree with me on this. I feel much better about what Oklahoma's put on the field this year than what Texas has.
Yeah, I would agree with that. 654 Roar, if you want to check in. Phone lines, text lines are going to remain open. On the Texas thing, I will say this. One of my biggest takeaways from last week, people need to stop crying about Arch Manning. Like, good God. I saw so many people crying online. Oh, well, Arch Manning standing over the Sam Houston State guy. A bunch of people ignoring it. That guy literally stood over him and talked crap maybe 8 plays prior to Arch Manning scoring. Then on top of that, the excuse that, quote-unquote, it's Sam Houston State might be the dumbest thing I've ever heard in the history of football. Because guess what? Those would be the exact same people that would go after Arch Manning if he were jogging on a play or not giving effort on a play. So he gives effort and emotion, and you're mad at him, but you would also be mad at him if he didn't give effort and emotion. So
I think the whole discourse about that was absolute nonsense.
Yeah, it's just a nonsense argument.
The only thing that deserves calling out on that is Johnny Manziel coming out and saying that that's soft and all this, that, and the other, when there's actual tape of Johnny Manziel doing the same thing when he was at Texas A&M to Sam Houston State.
Literally the same team.
When they were an FCS team, not an FBS team.
Exactly.
That's the only thing that's worth calling out about it is the hypocrisy from Johnny Manziel.
And that's
that there's literal film of him doing it. We all saw it.
And that's what I mean, too, where it's just like, if you're playing football, I'm expecting you to play 110%, whether it's, you know, the JV team down the road or whether it's Alabama. Like, I want you fired up. I want you playing intense. I want you trying. That's
what
Arch Manning
was doing.
Would you
rather see the intensity that he showed in a 55-0 win or the blank stare that we saw in Death Valley Saturday afternoon?
Exactly, because I know my answer, and I'm taking Arch Manning's demeanor 10 times out of 10. Very similar to what Tristan Smith did as well, which we very much support here on the program. So that was my takeaway on that. To be honest, I just couldn't believe it was getting as much media attention as it was, and people were
ripping him. But to be fair, Arch hasn't given anything to warrant media attention yet this season, and everybody wants to talk Arch.
That is true.
So he gave you one tiny little thing in a game against Sam Houston State, and of course, everybody has to run to their keyboards with it.
Of course. A couple other things from last week to get to before we turn it over to Chapel in the upcoming segment. Just want to get some of these games that weren't as intriguing out of the way. LSU kills Southeast Louisiana 56-10. On Friday night, Tulsa beat Oklahoma State 19-12, which was, unfortunately, Mike Gundy's last game as the head coach of Oklahoma State. There's going to be a change of leadership in Stillwater. I think it's deserved. You can't put up 12 points at home against Tulsa on national television and expect to keep your job. You just can't do it. Friday night in Piscataway, I vowed not to watch this one. If you would have told me that either team, if you would have told me there would be 38 combined points between Iowa and Rutgers, I don't think I would have believed you. 38-28 Iowa over Rutgers. It appears Iowa's got a pulse offensively for the first time in ages. I also think a part of this is Rutgers is a really bad football team that's probably overachieved a little bit to start the season, but they didn't look bad either in all fairness to them. Iowa got the job done, and the rest is history there. Oregon whipped up on Oregon State in the Civil War, 41-7 there. That game hasn't been competitive in ages. Apple Cup wasn't competitive either, as Washington absolutely decimated Washington State. So it is kind of disappointing between the Civil War and the Apple Cup. Those two rivalries, with Oregon State and Washington State kind of fading into irrelevance in the world of college football, those rivalries have become way too lopsided, and I'm not sure they're ever going to be closer competitive again. I just don't see how Oregon State's ever going to match Oregon from a talent perspective, and I don't see how Washington State's ever going to match Washington from a talent perspective again with the financial situation at play with both those institutions. Your thoughts on those rivalries up in the Pacific Northwest?
I'm glad that they're playing them, but I mean, Oregon State is a disaster of a program right now, and Washington State is importing an FCS team.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at these two programs, not disappointed in these two programs. I'm mad at the professor at Utah who felt like they could get a better valuation and killed the Pac-12.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm mad at, too.
You know, it stinks. And I if anything, I'm glad they're going to keep playing them. At least I hope they do. Because, you know, these in-state rivalries need to be preserved. Rivalries need to be preserved in the sport. I mean, Lord knows we barely recognize the sport in a lot of ways anymore. But I don't know how you can have, like, realistic expectations for either of those programs moving forward. And maybe when their league gets like fully formed, and they're not just basically rogue acts roaming the sport, playing each other twice a year, you know, maybe you can find some footing. But I mean, right now, I don't know what you do at either of those two programs.
Yeah, neither do I. I don't think there's any sort of path to viability. Like, again, think about the fact that Washington State's head coach left for Wake Forest. Nothing else really needs to be said. Like, that's the state of the financial situation. That's the state
of
the
Wake Forest.
My Wake Forest even Deacons. But in all seriousness, Wake Forest is like probably bottom three in financial situations in the ACC, which is third and probably fourth if we're being serious in totality of the power leagues with financial situations. And Dickert was like, yeah, this is not just a better job. This is a significantly better job than Washington State. And he left in the middle of the night and packed his bags. So Washington State and Oregon State are probably two candidates that are going to be group of five or maybe even lower going forward. I know that they're trying to reinvent the wheel with the Pac-12 and slap a bunch of Mountain West teams in there and pretend it's okay. I think that that thing's going to end up being a massive disaster, to be honest with you, and I just don't see any short or long-term sustainable path to financial viability in comparison to the other power leagues. The day of the Pac-12 being a power league is over.
And it's been over.
It's never coming back.
No, it's never coming back. This is what the TV networks wanted. They got what they wanted.
Yep.
So, I feel sorry for Washington State and Oregon State fans, and I'm appreciative of them still caring about their programs. Because Washington State is, like, in terms of like a college football bucket list, like, I would love to go out there to the Palouse and go check out that area of the country.
I would really love to go
to Corvallis.
Yeah.
And I just hate seeing programs like this just get basically left in the dust for other people to make money. It's just, I'm tired of it. I'm sick of it. But then again, there's other things to discuss than the sad nature of the Pacific Northwest.
Very true. It is disappointing. And I would say the final thing before we take a break, flip things off to Chapel and start talking some Clemson. The most disappointing thing is the fact of, think about how close Washington State was to the college football playoff not that long ago with Mike Leach and Gardner Minshew. Like, they were, I want to say they were 10-1 going into the Apple Cup against Washington.
And then it snowed and they couldn't get the offense going.
Yep. So if they would have won that game, it's very likely they would have gone to the Pac-12 championship. They were one win and an end to the college football playoff spot. And here we are, what, 6-7 years later, something along those lines. And we're having the discussion that this team might not even be able to, like, keep the program / athletic department afloat at the power level and needs to drop down a tier. So that part of it definitely is depressing, and to come to the realization that sport has changed for good and there's not really any coming back for schools like, you know, Washington State, Oregon State. And John, to kind of just further that point before we take a break, I think that makes it so important with a program like Virginia Tech committing to, like, completely overhaul their financial structure within their administration and athletic department, because they need something like that to stay attractive to a power league going forward.
They need it. I have a little bit of pause, though, about the Virginia Tech now being flushed with cash.
Yeah.
One,
I agree.
I don't know if it's already in the bank account, if it's pledged. Two, I think with, like, the financial commitments that they're trying to make is going to put them, like, middle of the pack, maybe top third in the ACC.
Yeah.
I think Virginia Tech right now is just trying to make sure that they're alive in 2030 when the TV networks reshape the sport again. So I know there's a lot of excitement in Blacksburg right now about the announcement that was made on game day and the Board of Visitors approving all the funds. I know they've got another meeting next week about a lot of the finalizing of the funds, but I have my doubts that that's going to all of a sudden make them like one of the biggest players in the sport.
Yeah.
I still think they have a lot of ground to make up.
I think that's fair. Texter gets in and says, as a Wazoo alum, we forget Cam Ward was there just 2 years ago, and we beat Washington that year. Wazoo fan and easily. Shout out to our Wazoo fans in the state of South Carolina. There's probably not a ton. But yeah, in all seriousness, like, I would love for Wazoo to continue to be able to stay relevant in the current landscape of collegiate athletics, and hoping that that Pac-12 can kind of stay afloat out there on the West Coast and become relevant nationally, because I think that would be better for everybody. I miss the Pac-12. I wish things were the way they used to be with the five conferences. All right. 654 Roar is the number if you want to get in with questions on the Adams Co-Roofing text line for Chapel Fowler, our guest coming up from the state newspaper. Going to be talking some Clemson football right after a quick break here on the Roar.
At Koala Insulation of Greenville, we specialize in blown-in insulation. Blown-in insulation provides great improvements to your home's efficiency and comfort while being a great cost-effective option. We also install solar attic fans for temperature and humidity control, reducing your attic temp from 150 to 110 degrees, protecting your home. Right now, you can receive up to $1,050 in rebates from Duke Energy and get up to $1,200 in federal tax credits. Hurry, call Koala Insulation at 864-867-1779 today.
Injured at work? You don't have to face it alone. At Smith Jordan Law Firm, we fight to get you the workers' compensation you deserve. Medical bills, lost wages, and stress. Let us take that burden off your shoulders. With years of experience and real results, Smith Jordan Law is here for you. Call us today at Smith Jordan Law Firm at 864-343-2222 or visit smithjordan.com. Smith Jordan Law, protecting injured workers every step of the way. We are local attorneys with a proven track record.
Your access to cutting-edge pain relief just got even easier. QC Kinetics is now offering virtual consultations with new patients. If you're living with chronic joint pain, you can meet with a QC medical professional from the comfort of your own home. This new telemedicine platform is exciting. It's time-saving as well. They can do it by phone. They can do it by video conference. You're going to get one-on-one attention to evaluate your situation, to see if you're a candidate for regenerative medicine, to see if they get you treatment scheduled right there on the spot for long-lasting pain relief. QC Kinetics, the leader in cellular technology, regenerative medicine, they're helping so many folks right now. If you tried the drugs, tried the steroids, tried the surgery, don't do that. Do it with QC Kinetics right now. Schedule that consultation. Do it online, 864-766-8454, 864-766-8454. Virtual consultation, fast, quick, and easy and convenient. Call now, 864-766-8454.
Attention Roar listeners, are you ready to drop up to 20 pounds or more by the new year? With our friends at PhD Weight Loss, they've cracked the code with their Metabolic Reset System, their science-backed method that gets your body to burn fat first, not sugar. They're the only program where they guarantee your success and your results, and I can speak to it because I lost over 50 pounds on the program 2 years ago. There's no starving, there's no endless workouts, and there's none of those risky drugs. Just a smarter system that resets your metabolism, shrinks that dangerous belly fat, and keeps it off forever. And for our listeners right now, they're making the deal even better. They'll waive your consultation fee, you'll get 2 extra weeks of the program for free, they'll even cover the cost of your food during the program, and just for booking, you'll receive their 5 Steps to Reset the Scale book for free. But don't wait, this guarantee and bonus package is only for the next 25 callers. That's right, the next 25 callers. So call 864-644-1900 right now and mention the code New Year. That's 864-644-1900. PhD Weight Loss. Reset your metabolism, lose the weight, and keep it off.
Straight Up Sports is simply all sports all the time. Straight Up Sports is a collection of retired and award-winning sports writers and sports broadcasters from around South Carolina. Like Bob Gillespie from the State Newspaper, Scott Kiefer from the Greenville News, and Mark Sturgis from ESPN Upstate. Straight Up Sports is about the stories, just like the days gone by with no editors nor managers involved. Check us out on Facebook or Twitter or online at straightupsports.net.
Is your crawl space damp or musty? Water in your crawl space can cause wood to rot and create an environment for mold and mildew that can make its way inside your home. Canty Foundation Specialist specializes in crawl space repair. Call us today for your free inspection so you can have the peace of mind knowing your crawl space is dry and your home is protected. Call today, 864-641-0176, or visit cantycanfixit.com.
No one wants it to happen to them, but unfortunately, chances are good that at some point, it'll happen to you. Roof troubles. It's one of the most important parts of your biggest investment. So when you need repairs or a new installation, you need someone who you can trust to get the job done right. You need Joe Robertson & Son Roofing.
As a family-owned and operated roofing company since 1965, Joe Robertson & Son have built a reputation for quality craftsmanship. It's why thousands of upstate home and business owners have chosen them for their roofing needs. Beyond providing quality work they're proud to stand by, Joe Robertson & Son Roofing also takes a client-first approach to their job. That means quality roofing, fair pricing, and complete customer satisfaction. Put it all together, and it's easy to see why they're the upstate's premier roofing provider.
You can't cut corners when it comes to roof repairs and installation, so go with the trusted name in the upstate. Go with Joe Robertson & Son Roofing. Get started today by visiting them online at robertsonroofing.net.
Oh, oh, Hi, I'm Michael from The War and Treaty. You know the jingle. Now discover the facts about Ozempic, a GLP-1. Only Novo Nordisk makes FDA-approved Ozempic. Learn about the real thing.
Talk to your healthcare professional today. Call 1-833-OZEMPIC or visit Ozempic.com to view the medication guide and to learn more about Ozempic. Semaglutide injection 0.5 milligram, 1 milligram, and 2 milligrams.
Hey, it's Kirk Herbstreit. On game day, great prep makes all the difference. Same goes for your pizza. That's why I go with Frigidaire Stone-Baked Pizza Oven. Fresh pizzas go from dough to done in just 2 minutes.
Whether you're throwing a party or squeezing in dinner between plays, this oven delivers hot, crispy, restaurant-quality pizza right from your kitchen. Only from Frigidaire. Game-ready pizza. Get it today at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Powered by Upcountry Fiber, we are 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Providing fiber internet, HDTV, and phone service, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
Clemson Country, college football fans, this is your show, and this is The Roar.
We welcome you back in. Facts on Sports with Facts and Childress and John Hite continues right here on 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. Phone lines, Adams Co. Roofing text line will be open throughout the majority of the program. And now going to be joined by our Wednesday 920 guest. You guys know the voice, you know the name at this point in Chapel Fowler. You can check him out on Twitter at Chapel Fowler. Chapel, appreciate you checking in with the program here today, man. How have you been?
What's up, Faxanon? I'm good. Good to be talking with y'all. I know you've got a fan account now, so I feel even less famous.
Yeah,
coming on.
I did see that. There's definitely been some trolling online throughout the past week after I got sniped in the back of, I think it was John Blau's video with a not so happy look on my face. I think that was the culmination of not eating for 10 hours, Clemson being down by 20 in the fourth quarter at home against Syracuse. And then maybe some questionable answering on top of that. But in all seriousness, Chapel, how was your last week on the Clemson beat in a world which feels very chaotic right now?
Oh, my gosh. Wild. I didn't realize I looked at after that game from when it kicked off at noon to when it actually finished, including the lightning delay, was 5 hours and 27 minutes. So that was a long time in the press box. And really, I don't know, there hasn't been a normal game this year because obviously just given what this program is, when they lose, that's a big deal. And their one win, they were down 16 to Troy. So it's been a wild week, but also just like a wild first month. And I guess that's why we're here looking at a team with a 1-3 record.
Yeah, and, you know, it's polarizing, Chapel. It's surprising. I think a lot of people are dumbfounded by the start. So I'll just ask you, you know, we're a quarter of the way through the season, more than a quarter of the way through the season, rather, 4 out of 12 games down. What's your assessment of Clemson football through 4 games? Where do you think the primary issues lie, and what can the Tigers do to get the vibes a little bit better in the building to turn this thing around?
Yeah, I think I'm just shocked more than anything else. It is not the start I expected. You know, I in the preseason was not considering them like a full-on championship contender or anything. In my preseason, like game-by-game predictions, I had them going 10-2. I thought they would be, you know, good but not good enough to really truly contend. But everything on the roster screamed, you know, this is a team that if they don't make it to the playoff like this, that's a massive, massive failure considering who they have coming back, what all they paid to bring everybody back, just the sheer talent on the roster that the well-paid coaching staff and a lot of big names on that. They just, every single game, something feels off. And it's so hard to put your finger on that. And I'm not like a football X's and O whiz or anything. But on just certain plays, you can just tell guys are maybe a little checked out, that there's not as much like hustle to the ball. You know, like Will Helt has gotten a lot of praise for being one of the only guys who's really played with his hair on fire consistently. And I've definitely seen that, but between him and Sammy Brown on defense, and just offense not clicking. It looks a lot like 2023, Cade's first year as a full-time starter. I was looking yesterday. They have, I think it's 7 turnovers now in 4 games, and that's just not going to win you games. And then they force 5, so they're -2 in the margin, and Cade has for those turnovers. So everything offense-wise is kind of looking stuck in the mud like it was in 23, and that's, again, concerning and crazy because the weapons from 2023 to now are, like, extraordinarily better. And the quarterback is the same, and 2 years later he's making the same mistake. So lots of issues going on, but I think they just look stuck in the mud more than anything else, and that is, you know, an indictment on everybody, players and coaches.
Yeah, and I think I agree. And, you know, people have tried to articulate it in their own kind of way. I think the best way to put it is it looks difficult when it shouldn't. Even the easy looks difficult, whether it's the screen pass, you know, against Troy to Tristan Smith where it's a little bit too low and his knee ends up hitting in the dirt and it gets called back, or whether it's third and one and you have a running back that's averaging 9.1 yards per carry and he doesn't touch it on third or fourth and you go with a QB run and a pass and you turn the ball over on downs. Clemson's been a terrible football team this year in relation to situational football, and Chappell, I think stuck in the mud is a really good way to articulate it. We got a couple questions for you on the text line. You also are getting a couple of shout-outs saying that you're asking tough questions during the press conferences, so keep that up, Chappell. But also just a question for you about the quarterback with Cade Klubnik. The weapons, as you said, are exponentially better from 2023 to 2025, but it also feels like with this offensive line taking a step forward last year, they've taken another step back this year, and Cade has reverted to old habits. Do you think that's a direct correlation, a causation for quarterback Cade Klubnik, or just kind of a collective failure right now on the offensive side of the football?
I'd probably lean collective failure. I mean, I don't think anybody would bat an eye and agreeing that Cade has regressed this year, but I do think the offensive line is part of it too, and I think that group has taken a step back, and obviously that group really keeps things going and keeps rhythm going and helps you establish the run and get good passes off. So when that group's not playing well, now I know offensive line has had some injuries, I understand that, so they haven't been a totally healthy group, but you know, some of the pressures that LSU was getting, oh my gosh, they just had Cade running around all day in that week one game. And I don't know, there's been missed blocking assignments, you know, stuff that Dabo's pointed out, stuff that, you know, Eric McLean has pointed out in his film review, just kind of like, again, situational stuff, basic fundamental stuff. And that's not what you're expecting from a line that brought back, again, you know, you got your right tackle who could be in the league right now in Blake Miller, and a lot of other veteran guys, a lot of preseason all-conference guys, and some good depth behind them. I think they entered this year with like 7 or 8 guys it was that had some form of starting experience between the starters and, you know, a Thurman on the bench and guys like that. So when they're not playing well, that's causing Cade to kind of vacate the pocket even quicker. And that's kind of been one of his big issues dating back when he started at Clemson. So I think it's kind of been a perfect storm. So they're certainly not helping him out, but it's not all on them either. You know, I thought they had some good moments against Tech as a unit, that entire offense in the second half. And then again, that kind of just, you know, wipe the board clean after Syracuse because it's one of those 500-plus yards and you lose for, I think, only the third or fourth time in 131 instances of having 500-plus yards based on the game notes. So, yeah, that's not good on anybody.
Definitely a tough pill to swallow as we continue to visit with Chappell Fowler from the state. Chappell, I've got one word on offense where I think there's a disconnect this year, and I want to see if you agree with this assessment, and the word is trust. You mentioned something about how Cade seems to be vacating the pocket a little bit earlier. I actually think there's a three-way level of trust where trust has been fractured. I'm not sure Garrett Riley trusts his quarterback to make all the throws and make all the correct decisions, and I'm not sure Cade Klubnik trusts his offensive line to stay upright for long enough to where he can stay in the pocket and make those throws. Are you getting that vibe on the offensive side of the football right now that there might have been some trust fractured from the top down?
A little bit. I think there's been a general sense of hesitancy. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers on Clemson's downfield attempts or productivity, but I'm sure it's not great, and I'm sure it's down from last year. I think it just comes back to what you said earlier, and I agree with this. Like, even the simple things look hard for them, and I think that is kind of a sign of whether that's a lack of trust or hesitancy or just, you know, not wanting to take those shots because you're worried about what the outcome's going to be. You're worried about the big mistake. I don't think Clemson's offense has had too many, like, disastrous mistakes. You know, that pick six against Troy was pretty bad. And there's been some situational, like, key, like, third and ones where they don't get it. But, you know, it's not like Cade is trotting out there and throwing 5 pick sixes a game or anything.
Yeah.
I think it's more, it struggles on the little stuff, on the routine stuff. And I think, again, that's a sign of, They're trying to play completely conservative, but you know, I haven't seen the downfield shots consistently that you would expect from a team that has a Bryant Lesko and a TJ Moore and a now healthy Antonio Williams, obviously, we've talked a lot about Tristan Smith the last few weeks and how he really has not been involved at all. I think all that is a sign of them kind of not playing with like a hand tie behind their back, but keeping it like, you know, manageable. And again, that's concerning given the level of quarterback experience they have and the OC running it and the talent on board. But I mean, 19 points per game, I think it is 19.8 points per game through four games. That's not going to cut it. And given the talent they have, that's a pretty bad number.
Yeah, definitely in agreement there. Let's talk a little bit about the defensive side of the ball, because while I think you can put the offense to blame for the prior two losses, the defense dug you a hole in this one before the offense even touched the ball. What was your assessment on Syracuse putting up 433 total yards of offense, 200-plus total yards of offense in the first quarter, and 24 points before the halftime break in Death Valley?
Oh, my gosh. They were just gashing them. I mean, talk about deflating a crowd so quickly. You know, noon game, and crowd showed up after getting called out, portions of them, by Dabo for not being – all in, and they're there, and then suddenly you just got chunk play, touchdown, 7-0 onside kick, you know, and you just, I think there was a lot of feeling among the crowd of, okay, here we go again. Defense just, they looked soft at times. You know, there were definitely moments where there were only one or two or three guys playing with like the heart and effort and intensity that's required to win those sort of games. You know, I think defense is such a team unit to where if everybody's not hustling to the ball, like that adds up really quickly. And I think you saw that in a lot of instances. And then just like basic missed tackles. I think Dabo even pointed out on his radio show a few nights ago that longer run Syracuse had on its second or third play of the game was just like a basic missed tackle for loss by TJ Parker. And suddenly that's 30 plus yards downfield instead. That kept happening. They were getting pieced up on slot routes. Who was that guy? Jonte Cook, I think.
Or, yeah, the Texas transfer.
Yeah, oh my gosh, he was just piecing them up. It was just, I mean, it felt a lot like what was happening last year with the run defense and the pass defense that game. And then again, they struggled against the run as well. So, I don't know, I just saw a lot of miscommunication and not a ton of hustle and a lot of plays where it was maybe, you know, half the guys on the field, if not less, really playing with, like, the hair on fire intensity that you've expected from Clemson's defense, but they have not shown this year or the last year.
Yeah, and Chapel, that's been a big topic of itinerary here this week on our show is effort level. So from your perch in the press box, what did you see from Clemson offense, defense, effort, intensity, etc. This past Saturday?
It's hard to keep that up 100% of a game, but I don't think they're doing it consistently enough at all right now. I understand that it's not exclusively on players. I think there's a lot of like tough questions to be asked and criticism to be had of game management from everybody, from Dabo to Garrett Riley to Tom Allen and the schemes they're calling, the plays they're calling, all that stuff. I understand that's part of it. But I think there is a part of, you know, control what you can control. And I just think, honestly, it's too talented of a roster, especially on defense, where like those hustle plays, like you really get rewarded if you swarm to the ball. Good things happen. You know, they have a really well-regarded defensive line that's not really getting the push necessary. TJ Parker's production has fallen off. Peter Woods, I know he's getting double-teamed a lot, but admitted to us yesterday in media that he needs to be better. And secondary-wise, you know, Dabo has called out everybody from the Tiger position to Ashton Hampton for poor technique. I do think Avion Terrell is playing pretty well and consistently well. And then at linebacker, you know, I've seen just Wade Wood has miss a lot of tackles, take a lot of bad angles. And again, that's not maybe exactly hustle. Maybe that's more technique. But just a lot of struggles from veteran guys you wouldn't expect it from. And, you know, offense, I guess it's a little bit harder to tell about the hustle part. I think from them more I'm seeing, like, there have been some contested catches that Cade has put in a good spot that guys have not come down with. You know, it's not just on Cade.
Agreed.
He's had his mistakes, but the receivers have had opportunities where they haven't converted either. So whether it's hustle or just a lack of big play conversion, the plays that you kind of have to make 5 to 10 times during a game to win consistently, we have not seen that from either side of the ball.
Yeah, and I think people, I think it's a great way to articulate it, Chapo, and I think people take Sweeney's commentary of being a few plays away from the LSU and the Georgia Tech game. And for what it's worth, I don't think that was the case against Syracuse. But you mentioned those drops. Third down near midfield, Clemson ends up punting with a 14-13 lead. Bryant Wesco drops a ball that hits him in the chest, right? And it's those type of plays in games that swing momentum. On the other side of that, Haynes King goes 13 yards, 90 plays, and Georgia Tech takes the lead. Clemson only touches the ball one more time the entire game. So those 5 to 10 swing plays per game where it feels like you have a chance to snatch momentum, Clemson shooting zero for the field so far this season in those. At least that's what it feels like from my perspective. And something needs to change going forward to try and instill the vibes back in Tiger Town. Well, Chapel, before we let you get out of here, how can Clemson right the ship at this point with the bye week and then headed up to Chapel Hill on the other side? Obviously, there's not a ton of quality opponents on the schedule in the coming weeks, but it's Bill Belichick, and that guy deserves respect regardless. And also, Boston College is playing some pretty good football right now with their new quarterback in Logren coming from Alabama.
Yeah, I noticed that BC has been playing pretty well, putting up some good offensive yardage. Funny fact, I'm actually like a second cousin of Boston College's offensive coordinator, so that's like a funny connection there.
There you go.
But yeah, I mean, I think we kind of got the sense of it talking to some guys yesterday, but if I were a Clemson player in this instance, I would think to myself, like, I do not want to be part of the team that, like, flopped the hardest in Dabo's career. You know, here's a team that's 1-3 and has an opportunity to, you know, they're not going to win a national championship. They're very likely not going to make the playoffs. But, you know, you can be the team that went from 1-3 and kept fighting and finished with an 8-4 or 9-3 regular season record and went to a bowl game and won or competed and didn't check out, didn't have a bunch of guys redshirt and step away from the team. I think there's a lot of guys on the roster that are saying they want to do that. Again, I'll, like, kind of the caveat, as we've heard week after week, that these guys are, like, so determined to turn things around, and they've, you know, they're 1-3. They've said that 3 times, and it's been unsuccessful. So I think there is a lot of leadership on the team that wants to do that. I think you have to start fast. You know, Dabo even mentioned the idea of, like, if they win the coin toss, like, receiving instead of deferring to the second half. I think that's an interesting kind of admission about how much these defensive, you know, getting a hold of start situations have hurt them and how much they need a fast start on offense. You know, I think UNC is a good opponent to do that against. They're not great. But then again, neither team is. I think these teams are combined 0-5 against Power Conference opponents entering this game. So somebody will get their first win against a Power Conference team next Saturday. So that's a good game to start it with. But I think it's just try to avoid making the killer mistakes you've been making and see if you can get a few wins on the board and enter November in, like, a better spot. That's easier said than done, but that's kind of their reality right now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Chapel, tell our audience where they can check out your content before we let you get out of here.
Yeah, Twitter at Chapel Fowler and thestate.com/sports for all your Clemson, et cetera, needs is where you can find me.
Appreciate it, Chapel. Have a good rest of your day, and I'm sure I'll see you soon, brother. Crazy times here in Tigertown.
All right. Thanks, guys. See you next time.
Of course. Thank you, Chapel. That's Chapel Fowler with The State. You can check him out on Twitter at Chapel Fowler. Going to be talking more college football on the other side with Faxon and John right after this on The Roar.
No matter where you begin your journey or how long you stay with Tri-County Technical College, they support your career path from day one. Their enrollment process is seamless, and their experts are available to help you find the balance you're looking for. Tri-County offers financial assistance tutoring, health and wellness resources, career planning assistance, and more. They're nationally ranked and in the top 1% for successful transfers to four-year universities. Visit tctc.edu.
You can feel it in the air. Football is back, and the best place to make picks and win money all season long is Underdog. It is one of my favorite ways to enjoy a night of sports. Just pick whether your favorite players are going higher or lower on stats like touchdowns, rushing yards, interceptions, things like that. If you get your picks right, you can win up to 5,000 times your money, and you only need $1. To play. That's it. As little as a dollar. It's that simple. I love playing Underdog with baseball. I love it with basketball. Football, man, football is the best. Download the app today and sign up with promo code OOB to score $50 in bonus funds when you play your first $5. That's promo code OOB. Millions of fans have already won billions making picks on Underdog. Will you be next?
Underdog. Make picks, win money. Must be 18 plus and present in South Carolina. Terms apply. See assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/playing-terms_DFS_.html for details. Concerned with your play? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org.
Jeff Carey here from Sit and Sleep Upstate Furniture Galleries. Bring your home to life at the Upstate's premier gallery of recliners, mattresses, sofas, and more. Our staff has a combined nearly century of experience and are ready to help get you the comfort you need. With the brand names you trust, like Tempur-Pedic, Stearns & Foster, Flexsteel, and more, plus special financing, it's never been easier. Life is short. Put your feet up at Sit and Sleep Upstate Furniture Galleries, Highway 123 Bypass in Easley.
Ready to ditch a workout that involves just lifting heavy things? Or running on a treadmill in front of yet another screen in your life? Come climb some walls at Blockhaven, Greenville's bouldering gym, where strength and flexibility meet problem-solving and community. No ropes, no harnesses, just giant padded floors, 16-foot walls, and hype music. Blockhaven has over 200 rotating routes for beginners to Olympic climbers. Visit Blockhaven at the Judsonville District in Greenville or online at BLOCHAVEN.com.
The show continues after this quick timeout. Man, we're really having a great show today.
You know it. Hey, you coming to my house for the game?
No, because your toilet always backs up, man.
Yeah, but I'm calling Ace.
Okay, it was like 82 degrees in your house last time, and we kept popping that breaker.
That's why I'm calling Ace tomorrow.
The hardware store? I mean, you can't even use a screwdriver.
No, Ace, the one in the white and blue trucks.
Oh, right on, right on. Okay, we're back.
For plumbing, electrical, and HVAC, visit acehomeco.com.
Hey, Clemson family. I'm Jeff Scott, former assistant coach and proud member of two national championship teams. Success on the football field takes teamwork, vision, and a great game plan. I partnered with fellow Clemson alum Eric Newton to create Newton Scott & Associates. From Tigertown to Lake Kiwi, we're your championship team, here to help you buy, sell, or build. When it's time to make your next move, trust the winning team, Newton Scott & Associates. Real estate, the Clemson way. Visit us at newtonscottsc.com.
Tiger fans, it's football time with fall almost here. Whether it's gearing up for game day, getting a jump on new fall styles, or taking advantage of summer closeouts up to 75% off, Elkmont is where you need to be. With great brands like On Clouds, Birkenstocks, Patagonia, Vuori, Z Supply, Back 70, Columbia, and more, Elkmont is located in Powdersville on Highway 153 and Clemson across from Bojangles, or online at elkmonttradingcompany.com. That's ELKMONT tradingcompany.com. Go Tigers!
A fan favorite for almost four decades, Tigertown Graphics has been designing and printing t-shirts in downtown Clemson since 1988. Looking for a vintage vibe with a modern twist? Check out our latest collection of classic styles and current concepts. Find us at 360 College Avenue or shop online anytime at tigertowngraphics.com. For 37 years, it's where Tigers get their stripes.
Your family will delight in the locally sourced beef and other foods from A&PM Farms. Their beef is raised naturally with no hormones or vaccines, making its way from the pasture to their stores. Along with vendor and farm products from 70 vendors, they offer the very best in local food choices. Platt and Ashley Moore and their team invite you to A&PM Farms, 1907 Lawrence Road in Greenville, and next to Farmhouse Tacos in Traveler's Rest. Online at ampmfarmsbutcheryandmarket.com.
Whether it's cruising around the neighborhood or hanging out with friends at the tailgate, do it in style with a golf cart from Elite Custom Golf Carts. Let their friendly staff help you find the perfect ride for you and your family. Call today to ask about their free delivery to over 10 U.S. states and flat rate delivery to many more. Now with three locations, call or stop in and see what makes Elite Custom Golf Carts the Upstate's golf cart superstore. Visit them at EliteCustomGolfCarts.com. Proudly owned by a Clemson alumni. Go Tigers!
You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John. Now let's get back to the show.
We welcome you back in. Facts on Sports with Faxon Childress and John Hite continues right here on 105.5-97.5. The Roar. 654 Roar is the number if you'd like to check in with us. We would love for you to join the program as we're talking college football and more. Going to do a little mini segment on some games from this past weekend. Before we get it over to Landon Walker at the top of the hour to talk a little bit more Clemson football. But John, before we start to talk about some of the games from this past weekend, general college football storylines and more, did you have anything to add
on Chapel's commentary. I mean, I feel like we're all seeing pretty much the same thing right now. The effort level is not adequate, and guys need to play better and step up and find a way to turn this thing around in a hurry.
No, absolutely, and it's, you know, I feel like a broken record here, but it's the little things. It's, you know, I was watching Eric McClain's little film breakdown. Does a very good job with that every week. But when you're talking about how, like, it's on the goal line play, you're trying to run Randall up the middle, score a touchdown against Syracuse. And they shift the defensive line around, but the offensive line doesn't adjust. That they're still trying to do on the right side a double team to get to the second level. But Blake Miller doesn't realize that the guy at the second level has moved to the other side of him and is now blitzing off of the outside, so therefore he's not doing anything. And now you have a free guy in the backfield to make the play. It's the little things like that that if they get these things cleaned up, if the second Cade sees the receiver make the break, throw the ball and don't sit on it for a couple more seconds.
Yep.
Like, it'd be amazing how much this offense would open up. If the offensive line would communicate with each other better, if they would recognize what they're seeing in front of them better, and if Cade would just be a little more crisp with that decision, I think so much of this would open up.
Yeah, and you know,
on the offensive side. I think defense, it's all about effort. I don't have a ton of issues schematically this year. I have issues about not stopping the A-gap with Haynes King, but like other than that, it's all effort. It's all effort. I mean, Chapel brought it up, and he's right. If T.J. Parker makes the tackle on the second play of the game, what is the tone of that game? How much does that change?
Yep.
I'm serious. I think that the confidence level would rise through the roof if you just get one of those big plays early in on your first drive or on their first drive. But instead, you just got everybody sitting around waiting on somebody else to make a play.
And I wasn't being hyperbolic when I said I feel like Clemson's lost pretty much every big momentum 50-50 swing play all
year. Yeah, they have.
It feels like Clemson's lost 95% of those 50-50 swing plays for momentum, including and not limited to the T.J. Parker potential tackle for loss on the second play of the game.
Right.
I mean, like, you look at the turnover margin, and yes, Clemson's losing it. They've had opportunities to where they could get turnovers. And then to further that point, even when you do get turnovers, it was the one like Ronan Hanifin scooping up the fumble at the end of the first half of the LSU game. That kind of manipulates the box score in a way and the turnover margin because that didn't really buy anything at that juncture.
I also think if you start doing the little things correctly, you're not going to have on third and long a stupid penalty by Ronan Hanifin hitting a guy 3 yards out of bounds.
Yes.
If you're making the right checks along the line of scrimmage, then maybe Blake Miller's not going to jump off sides 4 times in a game. That if you guys are communicating correctly up front, maybe you're not going to have like a million snap infractions through the first couple of games.
Agreed.
Like, I think you just do those little things better. If Cade will get rid of the ball quicker. Like, I just think you need to see, to your the phrase, you see one go through the hoop, man.
Just need to see one like go
it's,
through.
I just feel so much of this is mental with this team. No, I think, yes, they're not as talented as maybe as we thought they were, and they did not put the work in this offseason to get better. I think a lot of these guys are the same players we saw last year, and that's a problem. But you take care of the little things here and there, and my goodness, you're just in a much different situation.
You need Cade Klubnik to make his layups, and for Cade Klubnik to make his layups, he needs confidence. For confidence, you need better O-line play. Like I do.
They need to make their layups up front.
And they need to make your layups up front, right? If you're double-teaming a guy, there's no reason he should be touching anywhere near the quarterback, and the pocket should be clean, right?
And if you've got 7 guys along the line of scrimmage, like adjust the call up front. Like I don't think that – I mean, we even saw it in the Georgia Tech. Like, even when – like, one half of the line's making a check, the other half's not acknowledging it. But if all 5 guys up front are on the same page, you can start to open some things up.
And here's the thing, too, John. Would you not expect a certain level of cohesion from a unit that played so many games together over the last however many years as, you know, whether it be 3 offensive linemen, 4 offensive linemen, whether it be all 5. I know 4 of 5 returning starters from last year's group, which played the majority of the season. And again, I understand there's been some injuries, but Tristan Lee's arguably been the worst of the bunch, and that's one of the ones that's been injured. So you could argue that he's doing more harm than good right now. I think that's the most disappointing thing for me was just, I can live with bad O-line play. I can't live with freshman mistakes from my senior tackles repeatedly at big junctures in games with penalties and missed blocks, et cetera. It's just, between that and the Cade regression, I'm really just confused as to what I'm watching. It's a completely different team from last year.
I think Tristan Lee's actually been leaps and bounds better than Blake Miller.
Both of them.
I think Blake Miller has just been absolutely atrocious. And guess what? With NIL, we can name names now. Like, I think he's been absolutely atrocious. You can't operate on an island as an offensive lineman, and I think too much of this season he's out there operating on an island. Voluntarily. Like, choosing to not do the right... Like, there's so many plays, if you go back through last week, where he just... If the technique's a little bit better, if your footwork's a little more crisp, if you're working in unison with Thurman or Parks, things can open up and things can happen, but he's just not. And I don't know how you reach someone who's started essentially every game that they've been on campus and are now doing things that they didn't even do as a freshman.
I don't get it. I don't get what I'm watching. Like the
I don't either. It's
the O-line is mind-boggling to me because like we got a text in yesterday, and I'm sorry I can't give it credit. It was right towards the end of the show, but if you texted it in, you know at home. The text read something similar from the messaging of, we saw this team go toe-to-toe with South Carolina. We saw this team go toe-to-toe with SMU. And then we saw this team go toe-to-toe with Texas, and the pass protection was good enough to win. And a large part of that's the truth. South Carolina was the hottest team in the country coming into Death Valley last year with the award winner for best edge in the country on one side and future first-round pick Dylan Stewart on the other side. And they have two beefy defensive tackles up front as well. Cade played well, and Clemson's O-line held up in pass pro. You go to the SMU game, Cade played pretty well, and Clemson's O-line, and this is with no run game, right? This is with zero run game. Clemson's offensive line played decent. Pass pro held up. You won the game. You won the ACC championship. Then you go to the Texas game, which I think we all agree is one of Cade Klubnik's best of his career, especially against the upper echelon competition. A top five Texas defense that didn't get torched for 300 yards through the air by anyone last year. Well, Cade Klubnik did it. And the pass protection was decent. So, like, I'm struggling here, man. I'm struggling to understand why Sadler's giving up five pressures in a game and Lee's giving up three and Miller's giving up three. You should never give up 11 pressures as an offensive line unit in a game in general. And I know Clemson threw it 60 times, and I know that there was a ton of plays that they ran, and that fatigue and that tempo is probably some element of this to a certain degree. But ultimately, at the end of the day, there is no excuse for Cade Klubnik to be pressured as frequently as he's being pressured. There just isn't. Like, you can't sit here and tell me that this is a respectable pass-blocking performance at pretty much any juncture during the season for Clemson thus far. I mean, I'm looking at grades right now, and I'm looking at pressures allowed. Pressures allowed in this game. Colin Sadler with five. Blake Miller with four. Adam Randall with three in pass pro. Tristan Lee with three. Elijah Thurman with two. Ezzie Amume with one. Sewell with one. Parks with one. Linthicum with one. You gave up 21 pressures. You gave up 21 pressures in your last game as an offensive line unit. 21.
That's inexcusable.
Which is why I'm combating the narrative that's out there that Cade was clean against Syracuse every chance I get. You are pressured on one-third of your dropbacks. You are not clean. I'm sorry. You're not. That the math and the data are right in front of you. And then when you look at true pass set, which is something that PFF does when you're in like a true pass protection setup for what your grades are there, Clemson's grading out as some of the worst players in the entire country in pass pro. Blake Miller graded out at a 28.5 grade in true pass set and gave up three pressures and three hurries. Like, that's another thing here. You were pressured on 21 of your 40 dropbacks or 21 of your 60 dropbacks. You were hurried on another 19 of them. Two-thirds of Cade Klubnik's dropbacks against Syracuse, he was hurried or pressured. So, yes, does your quarterback have an issue? He does. He does. He's way too slow of a processor for being a senior. He doesn't see the field well. He's regressed to bad mechanical habits. But I really think a lot of this wraps back to O-line play at the end of the day, man. Like, Colin Sadler gave up five hurries and five pressures in a game and graded out as one of the worst performances I've ever seen. Adam Randall is not a very good pass protection running back. The other issue is that Gideon Davidson and David Ezeumume are somehow worse, and none of them can pass protect. Like, you have foundational issues entrenched on the line of scrimmage with protecting your quarterback, and until that changes, Clemson will not see offensive success. Doesn't matter who's playing quarterback. Chuck Vezina out there, Chuck Faxon Childress out there. Doesn't matter. If you're getting pressured or hurried on two-thirds of your dropbacks, you aren't winning football games. Sorry, not doing it.
And especially when they're not finding tons of success in the run game. I mean, Adam Randall had a nice day, but I don't feel like situationally they ran the ball well. And so I feel like, if anything, we're excited to talk to Landon Walker on the other side of this break here. I just want to see Matt up front on both sides of the ball, even if your technique's poor. I don't feel like they're mad enough up front.
I agree.
You get poor technique and you're not mad.
Agreed.
So what are we doing?
What are we doing? That's a great question, John.
Maybe Landon can answer that question here in the next segment.
Maybe he can, because scrolling through the tape and scrolling through the grades and everything, man, it's unfortunate. A lot of these guys are coming in as NFL-caliber offensive line performances, and I haven't seen one iota of anything NFL quality on the line of scrimmage for Clemson through four games this season. Not one player, not one rep, not one grade, etc. Landon Walker, former Clemson offensive lineman, up next. He's going to tell us what went wrong on Sunday and what's gone wrong through four games right here on The Roar.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson, WAHT-AM.